So thank you very much for those really long and involved readings. I hope you managed to follow, certainly for the first reading, some of the story. But we'll come back to that as we unpack what the Bible might have to say to us this morning. It's always a bit of a risk, isn't it? I expect particularly for you when you have visiting speakers, because you never know quite what you're going to get. There's an old story of a visitor to a church who, as visitors often try and do, sat down towards the back in the days when you were allowed to sit where you wanted to, and sat down next to a existing member of the congregation. And the visitor was the speaker's partner, wife, husband, not sure which. And the existing member of the congregation wanted to know what was going on as the speaker stood up to speak. And the speaker stood, shuffled their notes, and so the congregation member said, "What does that mean?" "Oh, that means he's done lots and lots of preparation, and he's just checking he's got everything in order." And then the visitor placed their the congregation member noticed the Bible was placed there. "What does that mean?" "Oh, that means the speaker has prepared from the Bible." And then the speaker took off his watch and put it on the lectern. And the congregation member said, "What does that mean?" "Well, that doesn't mean anything at all. But don't worry, I know my time limit, so I will behave." Well done. You could laugh a bit louder, actually, for the tape. It would be fine. Yes. I don't know if you've seen those TV adverts that have sprung up during the time of lockdown, whether they're for adverts for broadband or for supermarkets or for whatever else, that the pattern is the same. What they show us is a family, the perfect family, spending time together, having fun, lots of quality time, harmonious time, do it during the lockdown period. The message in those adverts is really clear, isn't it? It says, if you buy our network or the food from our supermarket or whatever else, you can enjoy a life like the family you've just seen on your screen, despite all the COVID-19 restrictions. Except we know, don't we, as to so much else, in advertising, the reality can be very different. Maybe your family, your neighbours, your friends have taken the recent months in their stride, embracing the opportunities to slow down, to spend time and enjoy the space that restrictions have undoubtedly given us the opportunity to do. But we also know that for many, the story has been very different. Reports in the media have suggested tragic and large spikes in reports of domestic violence, loneliness, depression, alcohol and drug abuse, all of which suggest that for many, the recent months may have looked and felt very different to those idealised family pictures on the adverts. But of course, the advertisers want to sell their products. They don't necessarily want to portray reality. And so we shouldn't really be surprised about some of the harsher realities of lockdown for many in our communities or those that we've heard about or know. People, after all, are people. As well as our capacity for enormous kindness, great care and self-sacrifice, and we've seen that, haven't we, over the last few months. We also, as people, have an equal capacity for damaging, selfish, and destructive behaviour. If you put any group of people together in enforced proximity, particularly when there's very little to do and plenty to worry about, things can rapidly go very wrong. I don't know how many of you have ever watched an episode of Big Brother. You don't have to confess now. We've done confession. Or however many of you have had to live through years of family Christmases with all the family gathered. But we all know this to be true. It can be great and it can also be gruesome. We're people and we do things well and we do things badly. And as Christians, we have a word for this human condition. It's not a popular word, and it's not a word that's widely understood or used from outside our churches. But nonetheless, it's a word that sums up what I think we've been trying to describe, and that word is sin. The Bible recognises throughout its pages that deeply ingrained in all of us is the capacity to stray from all that is good and pleasing to God. Even Paul, the great apostle of the early church, recognised his own capacity to sin. In Romans chapter 7, verse 15, he said, and this sounds like a real plea from the heart, "For what I want to do, I do not do. But what I hate, I do. I don't mean to do it." The great cry of the five-year-old throughout down all generations, "I didn't mean it." And we recognise something in ourselves, I'm sure, of that. We don't wake up in the morning deciding to sin. We don't wake up in the morning deciding to do things that upset others and displease God, but it happens. The same in human reality that we've just described, and if we're honest, we recognise in ourselves, is what we see being worked out in that long passage from 1 Samuel. So we have Saul, a king who was chosen, if you remember back the story you had a few weeks ago, was chosen by God, but he has gone spectacularly off the rails. And 2 weeks ago we heard about David being chosen by God and then forming a close relationship with Saul, but it's been soured. In the previous chapters we hear the relationship breaking down principally over envy. Saul's pretty cool, but David's really cool. Saul is pretty handsome and powerful, but David, and there's envy comes in. The previous chapters are a story of this shattered relationship with Saul attempting to kill David. David fleeing the royal court and a state of virtual civil war between them, dividing the country. Then we come to this chapter that we've just had read to us, with Saul bringing his crack troops, the SAS of Israel, if you like, to hunt down David and his supporters after David's hideout in the mountains is betrayed to the king. It's a great storyline if you like adventure movies. So what would you expect to happen next if this was an adventure movie? A great battle, obviously, with tough fighting, but eventually David, as the good guy, emerging victorious. Cue the credits. But that's not what happens. The actual story is very different. David, as we heard, creeps into the royal camp with one companion. He is offered, but declines the chance to kill the king in his sleep, instead making off with the royal spear and the royal water jug. The next morning, David, via a version of Old Testament Zoom, shouting from mountaintop to mountaintop. If you've ever been on Zoom, sometimes you feel you might as well shout from mountaintop to make it work. Protests his innocence and loyalty to Saul, who confesses his sin in turn and invites David back both to the royal court and to royal favour. Maybe stories like this are not part of our common experience. I don't know how many times you crept into a royal camp with a chance to kill the king. Possibly not often. But perhaps nonetheless, the description of family and community tensions feels all too real. As we reflect on relationships and situations that brought us, or perhaps continue to bring us, pain. Maybe the mistakes made, arguments had, and hopes of reconciliation dreamed of that come to our minds are not as dramatic as this story. But it doesn't make them any less painful. And it doesn't make them any less real in our lives, in our situations. Today, as part of our sermon series on Who on Earth Are We? We come to, in the context of our readings, to forgiveness. We are forgiven. Looking at the amazing offer that means we can say, as Christians, we are a forgiven people. We can know that forgiveness is freely on offer, If we turn to our reading from Luke, the description of the crucifixion, we see Jesus not only forgiving the soldiers, even as they inflicted an agonizing death on him, but also the repentant criminal hanging beside him on a cross. No one is beyond the forgiving love of God. And we come, don't we, each week, and we have done this week already, to say confession together and hear the absolution, the forgiveness of God for the times we have departed from the way he'd have us live, be they small things in our mind, be they big things, be they things that are hidden or things that are in plain sight. We are a forgiven people. It doesn't say, and its confession does not say, we will not continue to get things wrong. But it is to make the bold, even shocking claim that despite all the times we get things wrong, despite all the times we fall short in so many ways, we can know that loved by God, we can receive forgiveness because of what Jesus did for us on the cross. I'm sure you've all heard this story, perhaps many times, and maybe you've heard it so often that the truth begins to lose its impact. Perhaps the power of it can be dulled by familiarity. Yet when we hear how individuals are able to forgive those who wronged them, often in terrible ways, it hits the headlines, reminding us of how amazing it is to be made to offer, being able to offer and receive forgiveness. You may have your own stories. Where we come from in the Midlands, there was a retired police commissioner who had served 40 years in the force, a Christian man, whose son in turn joined the police and served in Manchester and was killed by a criminal during a police operation. And Robin Oak, who tells the story, talks about the painful process towards being able to say of the killers of his son, I forgive you. A genuinely and heartfelt words that doesn't take away the pain, doesn't take away the difficulty of all that they were going through as a family. But as a Christian, he was able to say, as a forgiven Christian, I too choose to forgive. This forgiveness is painful to offer for by us as human. So it's offered to us by God, after all, through pain. But if we're a forgiven people, how might we, you and I, begin also to forgive? Together, later in the service, we'll say the Lord's Prayer, which includes one of those, I think, hardest lines in it, which says, forgive us our sin as we forgive those who sin against us. Receiving forgiveness can be tough, but offering it can be even tougher. As I said, Robin Oak didn't find forgiving his son's killers easy. Neither did it take away any of the pain or any of the loss. Yet the Lord's Prayer calls us, in those words that Jesus taught his disciples, to respond to our amazing status as forgiven people by also being people who forgive. David, in our Old Testament story, had every reason for not forgiving Saul. After all, hadn't he been maligned, physically attacked and threatened? Wouldn't it have been so much easier and probably more satisfying, certainly understandable in a human way, if he'd had chosen to drive that spear into Saul's heart? Revenge. A closure. The matter's finished. It was justifiable, surely. That campfire gave him the opportunity. Surely this was the right thing to do. But he didn't. Instead, choosing the much more difficult route towards forgiveness and reconciliation, a route which, if you read on in 1 Samuel, and please feel free to do so this week, was far from straightforward. The hilltop reconciliation we read about was far from the end of the difficult relationship between the two of them. But David made a conscious decision on that night in the dark, whispering to his companion in amongst the enemy soldiers, to choose to forgive, as Jesus made a conscious decision in agony on the cross to choose to forgive, even as the nails pierced his flesh. So let's ask ourselves, are there people and conditions and situations where we also need to begin to make that conscious decision as forgiven people to choose to forgive, despite the history, despite the pain, despite the sheer unfairness of it all? As I end, I want to leave a space to bring to mind people or situations where we might need to begin that process of forgiveness, to begin that journey, if you like. Maybe ask God whether there are simple actions you can take even this week to begin, as David and Saul did on those adjacent hilltops so many years ago. You know, one of the many losses for me of the COVID restrictions is that we're no longer able to have the opportunity to share peace together. It was a thing we could do in church as a tangible symbol, often just before communion, of God's people making our peace with, forgiving one another, before we come to the Lord's table to receive the bread and wine, as a symbol of new life and forgiveness in Him. So after the time of quiet, I'm going to invite us to say the peace together, encouraging us, as we do, we can't turn to each other, we can't shake hands or hug, and that's the loss. But let's hold in our hearts and in our minds those people or situations that we may need to mentally speak the peace to and begin the journey towards forgiveness. So I'll give a moment of quiet, and then we'll say those well-known words together, which are not on your sheets, but I'm sure you know them. So let's be quiet and offer what we may have come into our minds to God. So the peace of the Lord be always with you, and also with you. Amen.